All right. It is that time again. May 20, 2026, and your weekly dose of common sense coming at you. Common Sense Ohio, brought to you, by the way, by Harper Plus Accounting. I just spent, 30 minutes on the phone with Glenn Harper over at Harper Plus.
Okay.
You would think we're talking about fun stuff like what line your income goes on your tax return. No, we were planning out my retirement plan at the office.
And wow.
What's the best one if you have multiple employees? Is it a 401k? Is it a simple IRA? The point is, he's not just an accountant. He can help with all that kind of stuff and really guided me in the right direction. So
yeah,
our accountant could be yours, Harper Plus Accounting. Let's jump right in. On May 20, for those of you, or for those Cubans who are mostly the Cubans now living in Miami and the United States and elsewhere, they celebrate their Independence Day today from the United States. Turns out on May 20,
From Spain,
yeah.
Not from the U.S.
Well,
right?
A formal end of the U.S. occupation.
Oh, okay.
After the Spanish-American War, when the Cuban flag was raised over Havana's Moro Castle for the first time, it symbolizes the true birth of the Cuban Republic. Currently, it's celebrated widely by Cuban diaspora, especially in Miami and other U.S. cities, but not officially recognized as a public holiday by the current Cuban government, meaning the commies don't like it.
Well, yeah, because their independence was courtesy of the United States. Mm-hmm. Had we not defeated Spain in the Spanish-American War, perhaps Spain would have hung on to that.
Yeah.
And it would be a colony of Spain to this day.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Same with Puerto Rico.
So anyway, we, in 1902. So lots to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff going on in the law. There's stuff going on in the world. There's a war to be fought in Iran, sort of.
Yeah.
Anyway, talk to us.
Right. Well, let's talk about the 250th anniversary just a little bit first. Because it actually made some news today, or made news this week, of a political nature. I guess there was a prayer event in D.C., and the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was a featured speaker, and he had the temerity, for God's sakes, you know, to no pun intended with for God's sakes, he had the temerity to actually bring up factually, I mean, he didn't invent this, that God, the creator, is referenced in the founding document of the United States, the Declaration of Independence. So a lot of people think the U.S. really began with our Constitution. It did not. The 250th anniversary of the United States is keyed off the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
And people don't get that. And it mentions God four times.
It does.
And Thomas Jefferson, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
And I'll just get to the end of it here in a couple seconds. So Thomas Jefferson correctly, and Speaker Johnson correctly reiterated that the rights of citizens in the Declaration are said to have come from God,
yeah,
not from government. And that's just what Johnson said. And the liberal media just lost their minds over this. And there's
debate about it.
There's debate. It's like what Thomas Jefferson said. It's not debatable that he said that. Now, you may debate Thomas Jefferson and say, well, you're wrong, but that's
what he said. So, anybody who's studied this, and in law school, you have to get a little dose of this, but it turns out I studied legal history in undergrad.
Sure.
And legal philosophy. And this idea of natural law versus something like a Machiavellian type government, where the government just supplies everything. And there's a huge difference here. And the difference is this. If the government created your rights, Norm, then the government can take them away.
Yes.
If God created your rights, the government exists only to preserve those rights. So look, folks, whether you believe in a Christian God, whether you believe in, you know, some mythical Zeus, it doesn't matter. I mean, it matters to me. But
yeah.
From a philosophical standpoint, the idea is if you ascribe the origin of your rights to something other than human government that we've created, then it changes how you look at things. Then the government doesn't have the power to take those rights away.
Yeah.
Which is why we said we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organization its powers in such form as to them shall most likely to affect their safety and happiness. In other words, it's what we just said in fancy terms. The government didn't create your rights. It's there only to preserve the rights that God gave us. And, you know, it's such a fundamental distinction, and it's such a dangerous argument to say that we created these rights.
Right, right.
And it's not to say you have to believe in God, although I do.
Yeah.
It's not to say that you have to believe in this higher power. You have to believe in it. But if you ascribe the origin of rights to the government, then you are also giving the government the power to take them away.
And the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence in particular were an advancement upon the classical instructions and the classical understanding of what government is. So if you go back to Plato,
Aristotle,
to those guys and you study what they thought legitimate government was or how it should be structured, the idea of inalienable rights didn't even exist for them. Mm-mm. Our form of government is actually a progress. It's an advancement on classical thought. It's an advancement for Western thought and for the freedom of human beings. It's part of what makes our country and the founding so incredible and so remarkable. And if people understood the panoply of human history, and they could and look at it as a timeline of the growth of human rights from, you know, women were chattels, and slaves were you know, no better than cows and ducks that the plantation owner owned. And if you come all the way up to today, it's the United States that has taken human rights to the level that it is now. Yes. And for people not to understand that and not to look at things like the Declaration of Independence and to misinterpret or not understand it, the First Amendment forbids the creation of a state church. So on one hand, they're saying our rights came from God. On the other hand, they were in no way oppressing people to have to join a church.
It gives you chills when you think about it.
It's unbelievable.
How ingenious and insightful
and open-minded.
And open-minded it is. And,
yeah.
You know, was it perfect? No.
No.
No, and we are striving for that.
The guy who wrote those words was a slave owner.
Right.
And he knew he was wrong.
They knew he was wrong. And it just is, it's so incredible to me that people can stand on the shoulders of these giants and piss down, which is what they're doing, right?
Right.
Like on the same platform that this document created, these people stand arguing to abolish it.
It's incredible.
They're cutting off the limb that they're sitting on.
Yeah.
It is insane, because if I tell you what,
really insane.
Study government throughout history and you see what happens when you give the government the power to instill and take away rights, it is death
results. Right.
Almost inevitably death.
Right.
So you may have it good for a period of time in history, maybe even a long period of time in history, but sooner or later,
right,
it goes south.
Yeah, you mentioned Cuba, you know, and I'm sure at the time, you know, having gotten his law education in America, I'm sure at the time Castro and his communist buddies that overthrew Batista, I'm sure at the time they had some kind of notions that they were doing something high-minded and they're going to liberate people from, you know, this oppressive dictatorship that did exist in Cuba. But then it went all wrong. And now Cuba is run basically by a family mafia. You know, it's not at all what they had advertised.
And the fact that our founders,
and they put people up against a wall and shot them,
right, killed them.
Yeah.
And the fact that our founders recognized the danger in that form of government before it really had been experimented and tried.
Right.
You know, like they recognized that this is not what we want.
And yes.
So this is before Stalin, before Lenin, before all those.
Yes.
Mussolini and before the Cuban Revolution. I mean, it's like these guys figured it out and said, we don't want that.
Yeah.
We want a government where God provides the rights.
Yeah.
And we just protect those rights.
Yeah.
And every time we have, as a country, have experimented beyond that, it's gone bad.
Yeah.
It has gone bad. And it's a remarkable thing that people want to destroy it rather than embrace it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe this is a segue into the Mangione mess.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to discuss that. And is it Robinson or what? The guy who shot Charlie Kirk? I'm not even going to say alleged.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two cases are very disturbing. The attempts to suppress the evidence.
We'll take that one apart a little bit.
Yeah. But I wish you would, Steve. So let's get into that when you're ready.
Yeah. Before that, well, what is interesting to me about the Mangione situation is that we have fostered the far left, the communists, if you will, call them what you will, but the Marxist. And I think, Hassan Pike or whatever his name, he was actually citing Engels in support of this idea of social murder.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've found a way to justify cold-blooded murder of somebody who is attached to a business system or a model that they don't like. So they just kill them. And that's okay. And these people are out. This was going to be my bad for the day. I'll just talk about it now.
Yeah.
These people are out there protesting on the streets and in favor of killing this guy. It's a justified cold-blooded murder in their eyes because he stood for something they disagreed with.
Yeah. And surprise, surprise, 1 week after Piker said that, a guy runs into the correspondence dinner with guns and knives, right? Yep. And he's going to do something to, you know, make a society better by getting rid of the orange man.
By killing people. And you know, it's what Castro did.
Yeah.
That's what Stalin did.
Yeah.
It's like, and do you think that you're going to be better at it?
Right.
You know, shame on, like you said, I think on some level, Castro and his cronies probably thought, look, doing this for the good.
Right.
And same as Stalin, same as Lenin. I mean, they thought that this was for the good. Mao, we're going to instill
Ho Chi Minh.
We're going to instill this,
this
utopian existence, but we just have to kill a couple million people first. But this is how it starts. So that you can,
if
you can kill the people that you disagree with and do it on your own moral high horse without any sort of moral consequence, that's the first step down this path. It just is.
Yeah, it truly is. And, you know, Stalin remarkably said, you know, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. I mean, once the government can define what is moral and immoral, and after all, laws are you know, the foundation of all law is some sort of moral code, and either you have a good code or you have a horrible code.
Right.
And if your code is simply might makes right, and the government has all the guns and all the power, well then whatever I say is what's moral.
Yeah, and these Mangionettes are on the, I think that's what they're calling them, Mangionettes or Mangione, whatever they are. They're on the crazy courthouse steps and like spewing this nonsense. And one of them even said, and this is a quote, kids are better off without them. You know, it's like, think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that. You took this man's children's father. You took him. You took, as Clint Eastwood said, you took all he's got and everything he's ever going to have. You killed this man.
Yeah.
And you did it because you didn't like the healthcare system.
So my generation, the idiots would wear these Che t-shirts. And, you know, Che was one of Castro's consigliores. He was, if you will, Castro's deputy during the revolution, and the CIA arranged basically for his assassination. But before that, Che basically was a doctor by profession. And there's a movie, you know, that romanticizes his life called The Motorcycle Diaries. And but what Che really was is he was the head executioner and the head torturer for the Castro regime. He's the Adolf Eichmann of the Castro regime. He's the guy that did the political purity tests and put people up against the wall and tortured them as a physician. He knew how to extract the maximum pain, and he would torture people before he killed them. And this is, My idiot Coke, you know, people my age were wearing Che t-shirts and they still sell them today. And you're like, well, why don't you just put on a Saddam Hussein t-shirt?
Well, because they probably would. Actually.
They probably would.
And I've seen something similar. Some college kid was debating. This is like YouTube stuff, but it's true. They're doing it. He's debating it, saying, no, we're not communists. We're Maoists. And it's like, that's your model. That's what you're looking for. You're a Maoist.
Yeah.
Like, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It is. I don't know the psychology, but it's catchy. It's catching on. And right. now we fostered this environment in our society in the United States where, and you've seen what's going on in Britain too, and there's a big backlash, but yes, where it's okay to kill people that you don't agree with. And you do it under the guise of righteousness because you up here have a better moral structure than everybody else does.
Right.
And if that's how you feel, you can kill people. Think where that ends.
So you really don't believe in free speech if you think that way. Mm. You really don't believe in it.
You believe in free speech to the extent you agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe in free speech for me, not for thee. And that is the problem in England right now. There's probably no other country other than like North Korea or China that is more concerned about what is inside somebody's head and what comes out of their mouth than England. And you're just like, oh my God, all the founding fathers of the United States in one way or another trace their roots either immediately preceding their birth or they were themselves from England. And so that entire enlightenment that the Western world went through is, it's like it's dissipated now. And we're under some kind of weird Sharia law in England, which was the fountainhead of the American Revolution.
Yeah.
That's where we got our ideas.
Yeah. Go back to the Magna Carta and before that.
Exactly.
There's something called the Assizes of Clarendon. I mean, there's all sorts of cool stuff.
Yes.
That's rich in history.
Yeah.
And these rights and it created people like Dice and John Locke.
Yeah.
And Adam Smith.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
And Ben Franklin and on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
George Washington, who fought for the British during the French Indian War.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
And these people, again, they're standing on the shoulders of these giants thinking, you know, it's almost like the fish that don't know the water they're swimming in.
Yes.
You don't realize that you're complaining on the screen of your $1,500 iPhone that capitalism and freedom invented.
Yeah.
And you, I even heard Joe Rogan say this the other day about oil. We just need the government to take over the oil business. Like,
what
could possibly go wrong, Joe?
Right.
Right. When's the last time the government ran any business efficiently? Right. I mean, it's lunacy. These people that think they can fix the market by fixing the prices, the Zoran Mondamiists who think that they have the aptitude to actually go and set prices and create an entire market structure on your own. Right. Because the last time Rogan knew anything about the market prices of oil and how the oil is extracted, how it's sold, how it's transported, what the regulatory scheme does, what do the investors do for prospecting?
Yeah.
What is the government regulation that's going to come into effect in like 2030 have to do with whether somebody's going to go spend $10 billion now? It's like, I'm making this stuff up, but I think I'm about right.
Yeah.
On the market. And these arrogant people who think that they could do it better, it's lunacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's my soapbox.
Well, it's a good one. You brought up the war, since that's such a huge topic in the topic of oil, I'll just say, and then I think I would love to get into the two assassin cases with you.
Okay.
But, I think now after 6 weeks of truce or whatever it's been or whatever this low key, low boil.
Sort of a hot truce.
Yeah, hot truce. I'm with General Jack Keane and a lot of these really good students of military history. We just need to end this. These people, it's pretty clear they're trying to foil the midterms for Trump. They're also undermining American citizens' support for Trump. And this is the classic. It's what happened during the Vietnam War. It's what happened in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you grind the willpower of the American people down to where they're just done with something. And it can be over the price of gas, frankly. And, you know, we can argue about how, you know, a nuclear-free Middle East, in terms of the mullahs in Iran, a nuclear-free Iran is worth a short-term high gas prices. But if the public isn't buying that and they're about to throw Trump and the conservatives out of office, effectively out of office during the midterms, to me, it's not worth it at that point.
You're speaking my language finally.
It's not, I mean, he's got to get this done now.
Got to get it done.
Get it over with.
And I think, I like what he's trying. I totally,
and I get it.
I appreciate what he's trying to do. Right. And there is an economic war going on. And I think slowly Iran is dying economically. And the more, I mean, they're not, I guess they have no place to store their oil.
Yeah.
They can't, you know, sooner or later, they're just going to die. And I think that's what he's hoping is to win this attrition. But it's, if you lose power trying to do that, you've lost everything. There is no win.
Yeah. He's going to get impeached.
Yeah. There
again.
Is no, yeah. It's going to happen.
For the third time.
Everything's going to just grind to a halt, and that's that.
That's that.
Like, you can't do it. Now, the redistricting has helped, I think. But still, I think it, now it's only May.
It's on the bubble.
It's only May, so there's plenty of time to recover, but it has to happen. And I would put like a 14-day fuse on this thing and say, we are either going to do it all in, or we're going to be done all out, or I don't know, whatever the strategy is, do it.
Yeah.
Not that I disagree with what the long-term strategy is. I probably do agree. But you can't do that at the cost of losing power.
Right, right. And I'm sensitive, like Trump seems to be, that he wants to leave some economic infrastructure left for the 30 million or whatever the number is of Iranian citizens who are not part of this insane government. And I get that. But, you know, at a certain point, we have to end this thing. I mean, I think Xi Jinping is licking his chops. There would be almost no better time for him to invade Taiwan than right now.
Yeah.
Because we have all these carrier task force in the Middle East. Yeah. What are we really going to do if he went into Taiwan right now?
Yeah. It's time to fish or cut bait.
Yeah. And redeploy our resources. But yeah, please talk about, talk about the two assassination cases, because they're interesting to me. Both were committed by assassins who had some kind of twisted, you know, philosophical beef.
It's the idea we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
They were justifying it rationally. That's because they think their moral high horse was a little bit bigger than the moral high horse of the guy that they shot.
Yeah. And I think both are probably not in full control of their legal defense, because they're being incredibly hypocritical. I mean, they both bragged even before the assassinations, and in the case of Mangione, afterwards he was yelling to the media about how this was justified, and now they're hypocritically it's like they don't want to take credit for the assassinations that they did.
Well, look,
and I know it's their attorney's duty. I get that. That's our system, and I'm not criticizing the attorneys. I think they're I think they're doing what that is the system. Challenge the evidence, slow walk things. If there's a PR battle, no question, in both cases, to try to get the right kind of jury in, you know, that they perceive.
I think
I get all that.
Both will end up convicted. That's
my
humble prediction.
Yeah.
And then the question is, what's it look like in the meantime? And I think some of what's going on here is that people are viewing these cases differently because there are huge media cases with huge public assassinations. I mean, rightfully so.
Yeah.
But what's going on in these cases happens every day, all day long, in every system across the country. I'm a criminal defense lawyer. For those who don't know, I do this stuff. And I broke down, I have another podcast called Lawyer Talk, where I did break down the Mangione search and seizure incident that happened at the start at the coffee shop.
Yeah. McDonald's?
Or McDonald's, rather. And
the backpack. He was in handcuffs and they went through the backpack. And somehow him being in handcuffs deprived him of the rights he needed.
Let me explain it all.
They needed a search warrant.
Yeah. Let me explain all this. So look, the Fourth Amendment says what it says. No person shall be subject to a search and seizure without a warrant. And then as time has evolved, the United States Supreme Court has carved out, several carefully delineated and well-defined exceptions to the rule that you have to have a search warrant to search. All right. One would be like a Terry versus Ohio stop, where if an officer has reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot, then that officer can go sort of say, Norm, halt right there. I just saw you walking away from what looked like a drug deal because I saw a baggie exchange hands with somebody and you pulled out money and gave it to the guy and then you walked away. So that's some suspicion that there's crime. So I can stop you right there. That's a seizure within the confines of the Fourth Amendment, but it didn't require a warrant because it's a limited detention, says the Supreme Court. So it's exceptions like that that have evolved. Now, before we get to what happened here, I think the first thing to note is that our court, going way back, I think to the 60s, in a case, it's one of two cases, I can't remember which came first. One is called Wong's Son, W-O-N-G's Son, and the other is Mapp versus Ohio. Ohio makes it big again, which established something called the exclusionary rule. Now, if you pull out your pocket constitution and read the Fourth Amendment, it says nothing about what's to happen if the government violates your Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
The Warren Court, I think, or the in the great, quote, expansion of rights, the U.S. Supreme Court established something called the exclusionary rule, which says that if the police conduct an unlawful search or seizure that violates the Fourth Amendment, the penalty for that is that the state, the government, cannot use the evidence seized in a case against the suspect. So the police go to your house, Norm, they barge in without a warrant, and they, lo and behold, they find a bunch of machine guns that you didn't have a license for.
Yeah.
They seize those guns, and then you get prosecuted and indicted in the United States District Court over here in the Southern District, Eastern Division of Ohio, charged with possession of machine guns in violation of the National Firearms Act or some version of that.
Yeah.
I'm representing you, and I say, well, hold on a second here, cowboys. You went into my client's house without a search warrant, seized evidence that you have in order to prove this case. And because you violated my client's Fourth Amendment under Mapp versus Ohio and Wong's Son and a bunch of other cases, you can't use that evidence against my client. So you got to throw it out of court. Doesn't mean the case is dismissed, but it does mean the prosecutor has to figure out how to prove it without that evidence.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's switch over to Mangione.
Yeah.
And what happens here is the police approach. There's a suspect all over TV.
He matches the description.
He matches it to a T.
Yeah.
The police approach this guy, turns out to be Mangione, in the McDonald's, and they stop him. They conduct a stop, a Terry-type stop.
Yeah.
And they detain the guy. And eventually they realize that it does match Mangione, so they put him in handcuffs. Then the police go and they search his backpack after Mangione is in handcuffs. Now, stop there. The U.S. Supreme Court, in a case called Chimmel, I think Chimmel versus California, C-H-I-M-M-E-L. I'm shooting from memory, so you lawyers out there, correct me. Has said that the police can conduct something called a, quote, wingspan search. Meaning, if I'm under arrest, anything like around me that I can maybe get in my wingspan that could hold a weapon or hide a weapon, I can search those things for officer safety. And that, and I think Chimmel or some of the case law even got so far as there's a guy in the dirt, face down, in handcuffs. The police search his bag, and the U.S. Supreme Court says, well, he could have gotten out, broken free somehow, and then gotten to that, so it's okay.
Yeah.
That's federal law. Now, state law might be a little different. And if you search a closed container like this, a backpack, after a guy is already in handcuffs, it according to the court in New York, who is applying, this is the oddity of this, the New York court is applying Pennsylvania law. A little odd. I'm not sure that's okay or not okay, but it just is.
Yeah.
And the court held, look, under the law that we applied, if it is not possible for a suspect to gain access to the backpack or the closed container, in other words, he's in handcuffs, he's already in custody, he couldn't possibly get to it, there's no reason you can't just go get a search warrant and search the bag that way.
Yeah.
Now, we can agree with that or disagree with that, but that was the court's reasoning.
Yeah.
What they found in that bag was a handgun, I think his manifesto or notes or something, and some pretty damaging evidence that's going to be, that would have been essential for the government to use to prove the case against Mangione. Now, it doesn't mean they can't prove it. To some extent, I think the video is not clear of the shooting, but he still sort of matches He made some other statements. There's stuff that's going to be useful to prove the case.
Right.
But it took it from a slam dunk to a layup, or maybe a slam dunk to a free throw.
Let me ask you this, Steve. So my understanding, being a Holiday Inn lawyer, my understanding is that somehow the federal prosecution, were that to happen, and if that happens, of Mangione, the federal prosecutors could use the evidence contained in that backpack, because in that case, the federal government had no, they had no role in spoiling that evidence.
No. It's more like this.
Okay. Explain how they can use the evidence.
I think it's more like this. So we have the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Yeah.
Ohio has its own version, Article 1, Section 10 of the Ohio Constitution, I think, or maybe Article 10, Section 1. Anyway, we've got an Ohio Constitution. Most of the time, both those things operate in parallel. If you violate the Fourth Amendment, you also violate Ohio. Now, under the Supremacy Clause, and I think, I can't remember the case, so I'm not going to quote it.
Yeah.
The states can provide a stricter standard of enforcement. In other words, more protection under the Fourth Amendment or any constitutional amendment, but not less.
Okay.
So the Fourth Amendment creates the boundary.
Okay.
And you can come within the boundary.
You have to at least meet the federal understanding of the Bill of Rights.
Therefore, when I file a motion to suppress evidence, meaning what Mangione's lawyers did, throw out the evidence, I'm going to suppress it from them, the police use or the prosecutor using it at trial, because the police violated my client's constitutional rights under the federal Fourth Amendment, as well as the state constitution. I file a motion to suppress based on both.
Okay.
And I just had this come up in Ohio in a case where Ohio law was better for us than federal constitutional law.
Okay.
In the Chimmel case I was talking about, I think it's Chimmel, guys, where there was a guy in the dirt behind his car in handcuffs. The police search a closed container. And the U.S. Supreme Court says that's okay because he could have gotten away and gotten access to that bag. So, therefore, it's going to qualify as a Chimmel search or a wingspan search for officer safety. Now, if in Ohio, or say Ohio law says no,
we're tighter than that.
Yeah, we're not going to permit that. I could be
Thinking it's that. Yes. That's the difference.
So, we can the search may well have violated the federal Fourth Amendment, and it may have violated the Pennsylvania Fourth Amendment.
That's what I've heard. Thrown out. I didn't understand why. And that's a great explanation.
And so, look, I think I heard Ben Shapiro, of all people, talking about the exclusionary rule and sort of rolling eyes at it, et cetera. And I'm not sure I disagree. You know, the criminal defense lawyers out there, like I have lived with the exclusionary rule, as have you, probably for most of your life.
Sure.
It always existed. But
fruit of the poisonous tree.
Fruit of the poisonous tree. So if you violate somebody's constitutional rights, but again, the Constitution doesn't say it. And I've actually kicked this around Justice Scalia. I can't remember the case, but back in the 2000s or late 90s, wrote an opinion. It's like, all right, it's probably time to get rid of the exclusionary rule. And I remember just being aghast.
Yeah.
How dare he?
Yeah. Yeah.
How dare he tinker with the precious exclusionary rule? But he was a strict constructionist, and it doesn't say that the police can't. And now, that doesn't mean there's not other rights or other means to redress those violation of rights.
Right.
And people would say you can't sue the cops because you don't never get any money. But I wonder what would have happened if we didn't have the exclusionary rule. How would the other law have developed? You know, without tinkering, because what the exclusionary rule did, guys. And you can agree or disagree with whether you think it's a good rule, but you can't agree or disagree with this. It is not in the Constitution. And the U.S. Supreme Court basically wrote a constitutional addendum or amendment to the Fourth Amendment saying, if you violate it, here's what happens.
To figure out how to make it operational, if you will, and practical.
Same with Miranda. There's no Miranda.
No.
There's nothing like that. So, in the last couple of years, I've given this a lot of philosophical thought. Like, what happens if you just got rid of the exclusionary rule?
Right.
How would the law have developed? I dare to say, I suspect that civil rights litigation would have exploded. There'd be lots of lawsuits against cops for violating people's Fourth Amendment rights. Yeah. And eventually, that would matriculate up to some consequences, probably more severe on the individual cops and more severe on the police than throwing out the evidence.
I'm going to hazard a guess that in a case with like Scalia or Alito or Clarence Thomas, they might look at it kind of like a nunc pro tunc kind of thing. Like, okay, the cops in process should have gotten a search warrant. But now knowing what was in the backpack and knowing that any court would have issued a search warrant, we're going to cure that defect retroactively because we're going to make what happened before okay based on the knowledge that we have now.
Maybe.
And that, in a way, resolves the conundrum, but it also might trigger more police infringement. Because the police would say, well, if I screw this up,
that's the argument, right?
Some judge will correct this after the fact.
And that's why, had we never have had the exclusionary rule, this is just interesting. I'm sure I'm not the only one that's had this.
Chicken and egg.
Had we never had the exclusionary rule, I wonder if the civil rights litigation, because what Scalia said, and let me point this out, he said, look, there's other means to redress this. Yeah. Like you can go sue the cops.
Yeah.
Now, right now, if you sue the cops, you get nothing.
Yeah.
Unless they kill you or less whatever. I mean, you can get big settlements, but you know, it's hard to, but if we didn't have the exclusionary rule and there were lots of these lawsuits, I wonder how that law would develop statutorily and what Congress would do, what the local legislators would do, because nobody wants cops out there going rogue, committing searches and seizures outside the Fourth Amendment. And, you know, basically you're, Shapiro pointed this out, and he's right, is that you're basically punishing the people for the act of the police, the people being those who you want safe from crime.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can agree or disagree. It just is right now. The exclusionary rule is, and there is something called a conceptual understanding called super precedent in the U.S. Supreme Court. There are certain things that I think if you asked everybody, is this good? No, we've always done it this way, so we're going to keep doing it that way. It's become super precedent.
Yeah.
Now, Roe v. Wade was not super precedent because we didn't all agree on it.
No.
So I'm talking about like...
Like Miranda.
Miranda would be super precedent.
Yeah, and that is a nice, bright line because, I mean, let's face it, these people aren't out there. I mean, they're out it's a thin blue line. They're out there between chaos and civilization, and it's the police that keep that boundary up. If you have a healthy society, you want people, you know, out there protecting society. And you've got to give them a rule book that, and I'm in no way trying to say police are any less intelligent, but they're under pressure.
They're also no less human.
They're no less human, right. And they're under tremendous pressure. And, you know, and they don't have postdoctoral degrees in most cases to understand all these fine, you know, exceptions and all of that. They have to make a decision within seconds. Hey, I've got this guy in handcuffs, but I've seen guys in handcuffs take guns away from cops and shoot people while they're in handcuffs.
Yeah.
So do I go through this backpack before we throw it in the trunk just to see if there's guns in there or not? Yeah. And you can understand a cop unzipping it, taking a peek. Oh shit, there's a, you know, there's a Smith and Wesson in there zipping it back through. Now, you know, he supposedly violated the search and seizure.
Right. You can see it. And, you know, what is the...
What's he supposed to do?
I have seen, or I people have heard me sort of talk about this for years, is that we're always on, like you said, Norm, a careful balance between chaos and actually, like, we'll call it Nazi-style fascism. Because look, if you could say what you want about Mussolini and Hitler, but there was probably very little crime, street crime, when they were in power.
Yeah.
Except they were committing crimes like insane. Like,
their brown shirts and their fascists were committing street crime.
But street crime,
but not disappeared. What they considered.
You weren't getting mugged on the streets.
Yeah. And it's unless you were a Jew.
It's like when they say the mob used to run Vegas, it was clean and it was safe for people, except that they were ripping everybody off and committing crimes and murdering people and burying them in the desert.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, if you want to get rid of crime, I've said this for years, if you want to eliminate all crime on the streets, just put jackboots out there with AR, go to Mexico, to a tourist city. And you see these guys in Jeeps walking around with masks and they've got AK-47s and they're the only ones that are allowed to be armed. And it's like, you can eliminate crime that way. All crime except the government crime. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And so we've got this balance and it's imperfect. I've never said our system is perfect, only the best.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's Cause there is no perfect.
Right.
And I think these various civil rights Supreme Court cases largely are correct, you know, and because you've got to go from the theoretical to the practical at some point. And if I was a police officer, I'd want to know the black letter law. Like, what can I do? What can't I do? Because I can't guess in real time what the right thing is. I need to know if I arrest somebody and they say something, or it, you know, maybe they got a bunch of bullets in their pocket. Well, then I'm thinking, well, where's the gun? Right. So,
well, that's a little bit, so things get a little different and they're, it gets very nuanced.
That's it.
It's very nuanced. Yeah. So, I mean, look, I don't think this evidence getting thrown out.
I like this reach thing that you mentioned, that decision.
Wingspan. Yeah.
I like the wingspan thing, because at least that's an attempt to say, if the guy could grab something within his wingspan.
And for officer safety, you're allowed to search this close.
It kind of makes sense.
Makes sense.
It's an attempt to be practical.
Yep.
And I like that. I like practical things.
But it got pushed, and the U.S. Supreme Court eventually pushed it to its absurd extreme by saying, even if the guy's in cuffs, even if he's face down in the dirt, even if he's got the police boots on his back and four cops around,
right,
we're still going to let him search that bag, because guess what? He might escape,
right,
and he might get to that bag.
But using that logic, well, he might escape. He might go take the keys to the squad car, and he might drive back to his house where he has an arsenal.
That's right.
So then that justifies searching his house without a warrant.
That's right. I mean, so it's a slippery slope argument.
And
the quote term reasonableness is always used to somehow sort it out, which is really like what makes sense to the majority of justices on any given day.
On any given day.
All right. So you heard it here first.
Well, some local stuff. And this is kind of, this is Law and Order. So on Netflix right now, Steve, if you haven't seen it, and I recommend it to our listeners and viewers today, there's a program called The Crash. And it's about a fairly famous incident.
Up in Cleveland.
Up in Strongsville. Yeah, Cleveland area. I believe in 2022, a 17-year-old girl, Mackenzie Shirilla, who's currently in prison, was accused and found guilty at bench trial. She opted for not a jury trial, but a bench trial, which is the right of somebody accused in a murder case. So she and her lawyer picked a judge to decide this. The judge found her guilty to 15-year-to-life concurrent sentences for killing basically her two best friends, two boys, one whom she lived with and the other who was a very close friend. And they looked at the car, some kind of Nissan or Toyota. They looked at the last several seconds of operation, and she was full throttle into a building. No brakes, a 100% throttle application according to the computer. The engine was not failing. There was no stuck throttle. There was no, you know, carpet that got balled up on the accelerator, no floor mats, nothing like that. She just full throttle. And it turns out that her and the boyfriend had argued and were about to break up perhaps. And she,
a little bit of an alleged motive.
Yeah. So she was found guilty. And it's really, I would say, for a civilian non-attorney, a good synopsis of how our system works and how, in spite of somebody not providing evidence, not cooperating, including several of her friends, how enough circumstantial evidence can amount to a successful prosecution. It was fascinating. And even though she was 17, she was tried as an adult.
Yeah. So look, I've got some thoughts on this. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but start with that. I mean, let's just talk abstractly about trying a 17-year-old as an adult. that's a enormous decision that the government had to make.
Yeah.
And that would be the first place I would question what happened here. And there's a reason. I've done a lot of juvenile defense. I've represented folks who have some very, very nationally known significant juvenile cases where the state has tried to bind people over and try them as adults. And I've learned a thing or two about the psychology. You know, as our kids these days, perhaps differently than kids in the days of yore, you know, days past.
Oh, sure. And there's some good evidence this girl was really on a unusual path.
Yeah.
She was a recidivist. That's a terrible word. I shouldn't use it. She was a frequent, I think maybe 3-4 times a day, TikTok. She would put little films together featuring herself, and she was a stoner. Lots of videos of her TikTok smoking, you know, weed and mushrooms and stuff. And so, yeah, diminished capacity or immaturity. Well,
the idea of the juvenile system. So we don't talk about getting convicted in juvenile court. You become adjudicated as a delinquent minor. Now, different states have different terms, but the idea is later on, if you're asked, have you ever been convicted of a crime? You can say, no,
yeah.
I was adjudicated a delinquent minor. That's not a crime by definition. Yeah. And the reason we do that is because going all the way back to the common law in old days, we understood that kids don't have the same developmental capacity as adults, meaning at 17, particularly boys, your prefrontal cortex isn't really developed yet. There's a reason we send the young kids off to go fight the wars, because they don't appreciate fear and risk the same way that it's true.
Well,
that they don't appreciate the same risk. So anybody used to climb trees as a kid and tries to do it as a 30-year-old, you're like, holy crap, I can't believe I did that, because you don't have that. You don't perceive the same risk. And that's why it is an enormous decision to take a kid from juvenile court and move him or her over to adult court and treat them with adult penalties, where instead of, say, from 17 years old, she would have served maybe till she's 21 years old in a juvenile detention facility or a juvenile prison.
Yeah.
Now she's subject to life sentences, meaning she doesn't get out. So people are like, when does she get out? Well, you know, maybe it's 20 to life or 15 to life times two, so maybe 30 to life. I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, start breaking that down. Look at your kid. So everybody out there who's banging the gavel saying, send this woman off to prison forever. I want you to wake up tomorrow as you make your teenager breakfast and think to yourself, ask yourself, is that person capable of the kind of adult decisions and thoughts that he or she will be in 5 years?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean to give him a pass, but this is, again, one of those balancing tests.
I agree with you, Steve. So watching,
I wouldn't have bound her over.
Okay. Did you see this program?
I did not see the program.
Okay.
The case.
I think it came out.
And I think the program
kind of recent.
From what I hear, the program took it, like these Netflix series, they always take take an approach.
It's not a series. It's a one shot.
It's a one shot.
Yeah.
Well, they guide you in a certain direction based on what they want.
And it was a British crew. I think they played it straight up the middle. The thing, because her parents and her got as much time as the prosecutor did, and then they brought in her friends and they made a pretty good case that she was a little daffy and just not mature. And her parents really, what really struck me about this, and this is where I'm kind of leaning on your youth thing, is that she was. This sounds awful. I feel for her parents, but I'm just going to say, I think her parents failed her. They allowed her to move in at like 16 with this guy who's like 22. So she left their house as a high school student and moved in with this guy.
Yeah.
And her dad and mom, who I think might be users, were 100%. It was okay with them that she was a stoner. And they called her that. They said, yeah, she used pot all the time and it's safe. And her parents had completely bought into the notion that pot is not a gateway and it's safe. And
you know,
I'm just thinking, man, you're 17, you're breaking up with the only boyfriend you've ever had, and you're it's 1 a.m. And no, she didn't have THC. The blood said no THC, no mushrooms in her system at the time. But you can see her making some kind of insane, She was going 100 miles an hour when she hit this building. Now, did she know that it was the end of the road and she was going to hit the building, or did she think she was going to be able to keep going? I don't know. She says she has amnesia, and it just seems to me like it to take the keys and throw away the rest of her life. Maybe the parole board or somebody will let her out early, but she's lost two appeals already.
At least 15 years. So look, but I think you are onto something. The notion that we can eliminate boundaries in our society and adjust them to what our own moral compass would say. So, it's cool. Just go get high and use drugs.
Yeah.
Do those things as parents. Like, you're depriving your kids of the toolbox they need to operate with a certain responsibility in society.
It's like no guardrails for her.
Yeah. And it's like, I still to this day am blown away by this phenomenon. Say, Norm, your wife goes out of town, your pets are all gone somewhere, and you wake up on Saturday morning and you have nothing to do. That's when I tend to do the least. I mean it.
Yeah.
Like when you take away structure, or you create infinite choices for people, you're not giving them freedom. I think you're actually restricting them in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because you're depriving them of structure and a path.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I have the most choices available, go into a carpet store and try to pick carpet. And you have like 50 different colors of brown, 50 different colors of blue. 50
the aisle goes on forever.
And it's overwhelming. You have to leave. You're just like, listen, just give me three choices. I'll pick the best one.
Right.
And I think there's some of that going on. Like, you give your kids too much freedom to go explore the world and, you know, flower, if you will, to do whatever you're going to do.
Right.
Then I think it creates mental health. I'm no psychologist, but I just think that creates mental health problems. That's why it's so dangerous when you have checked out parents.
Yeah. And she had trouble at school. And she was accused of bullying because she's a TikTok star, right? Very attractive young lady.
And I'm not commenting on her. I don't know anything about her.
Yeah. And so I will say at the end of the program, I thoroughly disliked her, but I was sympathetic to the fact that she was a child when this happened. Not a baby, but still under
That makes it even more dangerous to me.
Yeah.
So if a defendant is unlikable, it's sort of the opposite problem that we were talking about.
Right.
If somebody is unlikable, it becomes very easy to forego protection and concern that you might have for somebody accused of a crime.
Right.
Which is why, you know, you would say our system is there to protect the worst, because if it's not there to protect the worst, it's not going to be there when they want to protect the best.
Right.
And you can define worst and best however you want. People you like or don't like, or maybe somebody's guilty or not guilty, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You have to have boundaries in place. And I have found that when somebody makes themselves unlikable, I'm not talking about this girl, but when somebody makes themselves unlikable, it gets really easy for the system to forget about it.
Yeah.
Or to maybe act in a harsher way than it normally would.
And I think that happened in this case because I disliked her. I'm not saying I dislike her now, but her character at 17, based on the TikTok videos and all the snippets off of her phone, it was just, she was just so immature, such a self-interested, self-obsessed person, that it's the kind of punky teenage person always dropping the F-bomb and telling people they can go F themselves and thinking she's a bigger thing than she is. It's like, hey, girl, you're just like you're no better than the fat girls at school. Just because you're skinny and attractive doesn't make you anything.
Well, look, it's
that immaturity.
I was a jackass in my teen years.
Yeah.
Of the highest order.
Yeah.
I am the first person to admit it. In fact, so bad that there are times I wish I could pick up the phone and call people and say, look,
I'm sorry. Right.
I was an asshole.
Yeah. You know.
And I didn't really realize all the harm I was causing. I survived it. I grew up. I can look back with regret. This girl will too.
Yeah, she will too, probably.
And so if
she gains that.
But my
maturity.
Point is, the system has to recognize that.
And you would think.
The system has to. And that's why keeping somebody like her in juvenile court, here's the other problem I found, and I pounded the table and howled at the moon about it. People make political choices that impact kids. I've had a case where the prosecutor sought to send somebody over to adult court and try to send him to prison for the rest of his life for something that in a non-politically charged scenario, it would have been a misdemeanor in juvenile court.
Yeah.
Making a political statement because it's a media case. This is the danger that our system has sort of inherently evolved to.
I don't know if, you know, I'm not a defense attorney and I don't know how to assess what her defense attorney did, but I think a jury trial would have been much better for her.
Yeah.
And the other thing that he had said, so I saw his summation was in the documentary. And the one point the defense attorney made that really struck me is this isn't really like a cold-blooded murder. It was, if you will, a failed suicide attempt, if you buy what the prosecution's saying, because she's in the very same car. She had two broken femurs, a broken arm, a lacerated liver, spleen, like all kinds of internal injuries. Not a broken, but a sprained neck. She was in a collar. She was really effed up. And I think she may have been trying to kill herself.
Well, if that's...
And the dude.
This is why... The juvenile system is there to protect or to account for that kind of.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to call it diminished capacity.
Because what kind of a murder is it where you're killing yourself too?
Manslaughter. Or, you know,
yeah.
Or something.
It's a hybrid.
There are different crimes that could have been charged. That's why I am throwing a lot at the feet of the state on this one.
Okay.
Because I think this case should not have been bound over. And I get it. They're victims.
Oh, yeah.
And these family members are suffering.
Yeah, the two boys' families.
And
one was adopted.
I am praying for you.
Yeah, it was really ugly.
But sending this girl to prison for the rest of her life doesn't change it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that balance of the system. Do you lock people up and throw away the key?
Yeah.
Or who's redeemable, who's not? Is this a life-changing decision? If it's true what they're saying about her, on the other hand, she was not mentally capable yet and mature enough yet to make it's a tough case. And and that's why the charging decisions by the prosecutor are so critical in these cases.
Well,
so.
Thank you, Steve, for that, because it happened in Ohio. It's a high, I mean, it's getting international attention. Now it's on Netflix. You're probably going to get some calls on your other show about this. I appreciate the discussion. I just wanted to grump about something before we get to winners and losers. So I think the civil engineering by our local officials all over Ohio is just really, really bad right now. I don't know if it's funding. I don't know if it's priorities. I don't know if it's the ongoing war against the automobile and we just don't care about motorists because, you know, they shouldn't be driving. We should all be telecommuting or we should be taking mass transit. I don't know what the attitude is, but I know this, that whether it's green lanes for bicycles or whether it's not cleaning up a fatal accident for half a day or a truck accident for half a day, we are really shafting people, or construction traffic. We are really shafting and frankly, I think creating an emergency vehicle issue, you know, people who need to get to the hospital or have doctor appointments. There's a lot of urgent people on the roads that are in cars that need to get to places. And it seems like our engineers, our public officials, just kind of like, well, you know, we can shut down a road and people just have to go 30 miles out of their way. And
it's
it doesn't matter.
This is my pet peeve about government. It's the one thing that they should do.
Yes.
It's not the one thing, but it's in
yes.
Even the hardest core, libertarians would say you have to deal with infrastructure.
Right. Right.
And the problem is our government's wasting so much time dealing with all this other nonsense.
Yeah.
That it's not its job to do.
Yeah.
Like take over oil.
Yeah.
Instead of just like fix the effing road.
Yeah. Have city grocery stores. It's like, right. The fire hydrants are dry. You put water?
Get water in the reservoir so when California burns, you can put it out. It's so...
Yes.
I know you used to gripe about the buses.
Yes, it's like, for God's sakes.
Like the roads were crap, but darn it, we had buses at Easton.
Yeah, and there's nobody in them. you know, step aboard. And, right. and you're just like, you
it's
know,
like, why? Because it's political and it looks good.
Yes. Right. Well, my losers, before I get to the winners, because I want to finish on a high note. Is it okay to go to losers, Steve? Let me.
Yeah, let's hit it.
Okay. Losers have to be these non-endorsed by Trump Republicans.
Getting shellacked.
I mean, John Cornyn in Texas, Senator Cornyn, Bill Cassidy. Now, Cornyn's election's a week from now against Ken Paxton for the Republican nomination for Senate in Texas. But Bill Cassidy in Louisiana lost his primary. And Thomas Massie, the in my view, a fake libertarian. He didn't like Trump and Trump didn't like him. And I think it was all personal. But at any rate, he lost his race for that rural congressional district in Kentucky. So I don't, you know, people have been saying, well, Trump's his public numbers are low, but apparently not when it comes to Republican primaries. He carries evidently some real weight. And Cornyn said, oh, I'll vote for the Save America Act. And Paxton actually said, if you and John Thune get that passed in the Senate, because the House passed it.
Yeah.
If you pass that in the Senate, I'll drop out. I'll drop out of the race and you're senator again for 6 years. And he didn't do it.
He didn't do it.
So, hey, what do they say? F around and find out.
Yeah, F around and find out. There you go.
Did you have some losers? Or?
Yeah, my loser, we already talked about it.
Okay.
These jackass Mangionites. Look, I'm not taking issue with your cause.
They're like Manson girls. It's the same weird thing.
Like, I'm not taking issue with your cause. I mean, I am, but this isn't why I'm saying this.
Are they looking for conjugal visits?
Or? No, what they want to do is that what they're saying is that that this guy's kids are better off without their dad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a disconnect from reality to advocate killing people because you don't like the system.
But there's also some kind of weird sexual. The women are really all over these two assassins. They just think they're cutie pies, and I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, it's just insanity. So look, this is anybody's. I've never been a victim of a crime like that. Thank the Lord. But I've been around criminal defense my entire career. It's like I see what that does to families and people, etc.
Yeah,
nobody deserves to get shot.
No,
not like that. Nobody deserves to get executed in cold blood because you disagree with their cause.
No, that's crazy. I mean, that goes back to that. Oh, if I would have killed baby Hitler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
because you understand you're going to play God, right? It's back to the same thing. Look, these aren't inalienable rights. These are rights that we get to dole out and take away as we see fit. So this guy's right to the pursuit of happiness. Well, we don't think he deserves it because of his job.
Well, it's also, you know, it also.
And their premise is flawed, too.
The premise, it also presumes that human behavior and human development is a static thing. So whatever that United Healthcare executive believed at the time he was assassinated, if you presume you can kill him, the presumption is that he'll never change, his policies won't change, and you can't convince him of anything.
Maybe he was one of the guys that was trying to change the system from the inside.
They said he was a good guy.
Yeah.
So at any rate, my winners, now this is off the wall because we're an Ohio show, but it's the residents and the visitors to Washington, D.C. These are my winners of the week. So there is a series of cool things that are going on there, whether it's Jeanine Pirro's announced prosecution. She's going to go after parents now of these kids who get detained or arrested in these pop-up takeovers. Like they trashed this Chipotle restaurant over the weekend, just completely destroyed the restaurant in one of these, you know, pop-up riots. And she's like, you know, the kids know that because we just discussed juvenile law, they know that pretty much, you know, they're going to get a finger wagged at them and then they're out, right? Nothing's going to happen. Yeah. So that's why the mafia had kids running numbers in New York for the crime family. I mean, you know, that's a classic thing to use children as your soldiers, but she's going to go after parents, which And murders are down in D.C. The mayor of D.C. outgoing cooperated on the National Guard help. There's 40 water fountains, public fountains. And I, you know, I've been to Europe, and the public fountains in Europe, you know, usually have sculpture and statues, and they're beautiful. And it's a civic gathering place for neighborhoods. Well, D.C.'s had 40 fountains that didn't work, and the federal government's getting them all to work in time for the 250th anniversary.
Only for people to criticize Trump for doing that. Making it blue instead of black, like what, making the reflection pond.
Yeah, so the reflection pond is being redone. That's a good one, Steve. And there's a free IndyCar race. If you want to enter the lottery, they're giving away up to 4 free tickets per winner, and it's free. And the idea, they're going to race Indy cars down Pennsylvania Avenue, past the National Mall and the White House on August the 22nd and 23rd. The lottery opens up on Ticketmaster. You enter it for free starting on May the 29th through June the 9th. That's the window. Get your free tickets. You can go to DC, see an IndyCar race at no charge, other than obviously you got to get there and get home and stay somewhere. But, and then the other thing is, I'll say it. I know he's getting criticized for it. And there's a lot of things I disagree with Trump on. We talked about the war. I think he should prosecute it, get it over with. But one thing I agree with is this ballroom thing that they're building. It's not really a ballroom. I mean, that's the top story, right? It's really a civil defense structure that's going to be military. It's going to be made so that, you know, penetrating bombs can't take out the White House, the staff, the president, the vice, you know, they can go down, I don't know, 20 floors, however deep they're building this thing, with high tensile steel and concrete. They're going to have a drone command center on the roof of this thing for all of D.C., not just the White House. It's really, and I guess everybody since Harry Truman has wanted to do this.
Yeah.
So,
and then they even Trump's like, well, I guess you guys are going to know now because you've sued me. And now here we like, it's like just because Trump was doing it, calling it a ballroom, he was trying to conceal all this stuff was going on.
Now he is paying, and his supporters, they are paying for the ballroom portion of this development. Mm-hmm. So it really is a gift, that part of it. The rest of it, the taxpayers are paying for. Yeah. So anyway, pretty cool time to go to D.C., in my opinion.
Indeed. So I got some good. I we've talked about Troy. He's not here. He's up there working his young lawyer tail off.
And Troy is?
Troy is our host. He is also a young, new lawyer. He's still got to pass the bar exam, but he graduated last week. So I got to go to the Capital University Law School graduation. It was an honor to hood him, meaning I got to put the little thing around his neck.
That's fantastic.
So one of the highest honors I've had.
Yeah.
I don't want to overstate that because it felt very.
Torch passing, huh?
Yeah. It felt significant. Yeah. So I really appreciated the opportunity to do that. And he's not here to thank, but I did thank him for for asking me to do that for him. And I was happy to do it. But the honor was mine, not his.
That is cool.
And then finally, we have Memorial Day coming up. Started, and we've covered this before, but we'll do it quickly. Started as Decoration Day in the years following the Civil War. Where people would, the spring tradition of decorating graves with flowers and such. Eventually it got standardized and now we have Memorial Day. I'm not going to go into history, but look, spend a time with your family, spend a time with loved ones and friends. Think about those from the past.
Yeah.
Who, the shoulders of whom you were standing on, pissing down on, who created a system that lets you criticize the very system they created. So that
well said.
Common Sense Iowa coming to you week in and week out right from the middle.